This is the best of Outkick the Coverage with Clay Travis on Fox Sports Radio.
Joined now by Charles Davis at CFD22 on Twitter. He called the Eagles and the Saints game in New Orleans right before the week where the Saints did not go marching on. Charles Davis, how bad of a situation is it for the NFL with the way that that game ended?
Clay, it's bad because it gets so illuminated in such a key time. You know, and because the Saints weren't able to win the game, obviously it didn't become a footnote, it became the story. And what you run into then is then you start parsing all the calls all the way back. Okay, what about you miss this face mask here, or this hold there? All those things come into play, but, you know, when you've got the key play of the game, you have it happen, then after the game, obviously the Rams, Nikhil Roby-Coleman's like, yeah, you're darn right, it's pass interference. And then on top of that, you probably could have added in a helmet-to-helmet hit. It's pretty egregious, and you just wonder how it was missed on that one. I will say, real time, when I watched it with my eyes, I thought bang-bang play, but I wasn't right there on the scene. And then when you watch in slow motion is almost a killer for officials, I'll tell you that, because the slow motion really, really hit it big time. So it's a tough situation. Kansas City, New England had a bunch of calls as well, but I thought that when you looked at them in review, I think all of them were defensible, you know, and maybe the toughest one was the Julian Edelman one because it was called a muff on the field, and the standard is, can you overturn it? And one camera angle looked like you could still say it was a muff, and the other camera angle looked like you completely overturn it. So that put them in a really tough spot.
So what would your solution be? For Roger Goodell called you this morning. It's interesting the NFL has still not put out a statement. Would you want to make pass interference penalties reviewable? Would you want to give coaches the opportunity to challenge a pass interference call or maybe another one that they believe is shown to be have been made clearly in error? How would you try and reconcile with what happened at the end of Saints-Rams to try and hopefully ensure that it doesn't happen again?
Yeah, that puts, you know, for me it's a tough one because if I'm going to review pass interference, my next question would be is, am I going to review holding? Am I going to review other things? And that's where I have a little bit of a struggle, Clay, because pace of play in a game is something I'm concerned about right now with the NFL and really in college football with the number of stoppages and stop downs. And is this, you know, we all want to get it right, but also want to see a flow to the ball game. So would I do anything? At most, you could probably talk me into having a conversation about the coaches could get one challenge per game on pass interference. The rest of it, I wouldn't want to do that. And I know it seems egregious, and right now we're howling and screaming, and I get it. But I also have seen so many other calls along the way. Is that going to be my cause celebre as well? And that's just tough for me. I'm just not crazy about the idea because I feel like we have enough stuff already. And these poor officials, I can't even imagine, all right, is this one reviewable? Is that reviewable? Is that not reviewable? Is this reviewable? Forget it. That's just tough. And the other part, too, Clay, is don't forget these are the so-called all-star crews in the playoffs. And it sounds like a great idea on the surface. Hey, the highest-rated people get to move on. But to me, there's something about continuity with a crew that gets lost when we get to this. That trust that, hey, if I make the call, you know, if I miss a call, you've got me. Guys might not want to show each other up because they haven't worked together before. There are a bunch of factors that go into it. And we always talk about, do all the all-star teams win or do the teams with the better chemistry win? And I think in officiating, chemistry is a big part of it.
Should anything be done to the official who missed the call or anybody else on the officiating crew? Because I don't know about you, but there's a lot of times where a call happens and you see like four different flags come out, right?
Yeah.
Like even the people who aren't the primary viewer of that play, they go ahead and throw the flag. This is what's disappointing to me, I think. If somebody throws that flag and then the officials all circle together to talk about what happened, one, they could pick up the flag and they could make up an excuse and say, hey, you know what? Turns out this wasn't actually an error, right? If it was a wrongfully thrown flag, somebody can get in their ear as a group comes together, you know, four or five heads discussing something, typically better than one, especially when you said, like you did, it's an all-star crew. Somebody can sneak a look up at that Jumbotron when they put it on, whether they admit to it or not, and be like, right. That was pretty bad.
Might want to look at that one, guys.
Yeah, I think maybe we need to go ahead and enforce that. Throwing the flag, to me, is the default there when it is a bang-bang play to allow you to kind of take your breath, go in, discuss what happened. It's disappointing to me not only that the main official missed it, but that nobody else also threw a flag.
Yeah, I'm kind of surprised on that one because you did see, probably saw the video, and had someone send it to me last night saying, hey, why is he waving off the other official?
Yep.
I don't think he was actually waving off the other official. And I'm doing a little bit of extrapolating here, but I've watched it probably 15 times, Clay. I think he's actually waving to the Saints bench because, you know, they were charging down there to protest the call.
Yes.
I don't think he was waving off his fellow official. I think he was saying, hey, you guys back off a little bit here. And then the other official just kind of checked with him and moved on. So I'm with you on that one. I'm really surprised that no flag came out because I would have thought from that angle someone would have said, hey, that's something we probably should take a good look at. As far as what's going to happen, I can't tell you 100%, but here's what I suspect. The league is going to be having some serious private meetings about officiating, and it's going to start at the top with Al Riveron and figure out what they want to do with that. But at the least, the guys that miss that call, even next year if they have the best year of their lives, I think it's going to be difficult for them to get a playoff assignment. You know what I mean? I think it's just going to be really difficult because of that. And because the heat's on and the eyes are on, I just think it makes it more difficult for them. And I'm not sitting here saying they're the worst officials in the world. They got there for a certain reason, and that was because they had a heck of a season. Bottom line is, in a situation like that, you know how it goes, Clay. When the spotlight hits, there's going to be a lot of questions, and some people better have some answers.
We've got two different decisions. I mean, you talk about the fine line between your season being over and going to the Super Bowl. Obviously, you can talk about that call, where if it's made, the Saints probably make the decision to just go down, run the ball three times, and take a knee. But actually, I want to go back to stick on the Saints game for a minute. Having said as bad as the call was and as bad of a missed call as it was, why did Sean Payton throw the ball on first down after the big catch? Because that's in real time. This is not Monday morning quarterbacking.
No,
I'm sitting there saying, run the ball, make them take the timeouts. Worst case scenario, even if you don't get the first down, you've got basically a surefire field goal. There'll be 40 seconds left. The Rams will have no timeout. Now, maybe the answer is Greg the Leg is going to make it from 70 yards anyway, because the guy bombed one through from 57 and it was good from 65 probably. So maybe that's the answer and we still go to overtime. But it seems to me that in that situation, running the ball on first down instead of throwing it and getting an incompletion and stopping the clock was the play.
Yeah, and that was real time because I was sitting there looking at the clock. I believe it was 1:57. The Rams had two timeouts left. You also have a field goal kicker, Will Lutz, who had made, 26 straight at one point this season? So he's pretty darn dependable kicker. At that point, I think that, I can't get totally inside of Sean's head, but that's who he is. You know, the beauty of what we see with the guy going for the onside kick to start the third quarter against the Colts in the Super Bowl and change the fortunes of that game, the guy who went fake punt on his own 30-yard line the week before against the Eagles on fourth down, and the Eagles were in punt safe, which means their regular defense was on the field and they ran it anyway and got it, that's the same guy who called that pass play. And sometimes it comes back to bite you a little bit, even though it should never have bitten him because there should have been the interference call and the helmet-to-helmet hit, and he should have been off the hook totally on that one. But that's the one you look at. I know the Rams are saying, quietly, well, if there had been a face mask like we thought on Goff, what if we punch it in right there because we had first and goal at the one? We punch it in there, that changes the complexion as well. So it's one of those things that goes back and forth, but we're never going to truly get past the one that gets illuminated, and that was that hit right there with Nickell Robey-Coleman on Tommy Lee Lewis.
All right, so in the other game, you played football. When Dee Ford lined up offsides, we're talking about the fine line between being in the Super Bowl and not.
Yes.
Oftentimes what the Patriots do is wait for you to make a mistake. Right?
Yep.
I mean, it's one thing if you make a mistake on the field, but a mental error like not lining up onside? Because I haven't heard as much discussion about this play as I think there probably should be. No, Tom Brady throws an interception there, right? That game would have been over. Chiefs would have been on the way to the Super Bowl. Instead, D Ford lines up offsides.
Yep.
And I don't think we've discussed it very much. I think, again, the officiating call has gotten a lot more attention. How bad of an error is that in that game, in that situation, to not jump offsides because you're trying to make a play of aggression and somebody, you know, like Brady gives you a voice inflection you're not anticipating? Yep. That happens. It's something that certainly can't make you happy as a coach. But to not get lined up correctly and be over the line like he was, I mean, what would you be thinking if you were one of his teammates when you go back and watch that film?
Well, you're wondering, in all situations when you line up, you can look to the sideline and get a little help, meaning the official. Like,
yeah.
When you line up and you look over there, hey, and they're going to tell you whether you're good or bad.
Especially when you're on the end like he was.
Yeah, and listen, the officials don't want to throw a flag. They're not going to say, well, you figure it out, and we're going to throw a flag and say, gotcha. They just assume not throw one. For everyone who's hearing our voices, just think about if you watch a game, every time a wide receiver runs out wide,
yep.
First thing they do is look at the official, am I good or not, right? So D Ford can turn and get that help. It's surprising to me, one, that that doesn't happen, but two, just the whole idea of where you're lined up and knowing your situation, how crucial it is, that you could actually be in the neutral zone and get that flag because the ball bounces off of Gronk's hands, you get the interception, this is over, you're headed to the Super Bowl, and it comes back. And I know Kansas City fans, and I can understand their frustration. They felt like every time there was one of those calls, it ended up New England's way. Wasn't actually true, but it certainly felt that way, didn't it?
Yes.
The Edelman thing happens.
It's felt that way, Charles, for 15 years.
Right. You know, and people just keep going, oh, my God, New England again. But when you line up that way, that's an act of commission. I mean, you just lined up incorrectly. So guess what? Because you did, everything that happens after that really doesn't matter unless New England gets something to benefit them, and they didn't. And that's just really, really tough to see that happen that way, and that's the way it went down. Because Kansas City was down 14-0. They were the Rams and came back and had a great chance of winning that game. Would have been one of the better comebacks we've seen, and Tom Brady would have thrown three interceptions in that game. And we would be going, wow, what happened to the magic of Brady? Instead, you keep giving him opportunities. You know what's going to happen with the magic of Brady. He's going to come get you, and he did.
Tom Brady has been in three overtime games in the playoffs or the Super Bowl. He has won all three, getting the ball, driving down, and scoring without the opponent getting the ball. Do you have a problem in overtime with a guy like Patrick Mahomes, or if you had flipped it, if the Chiefs had won that toss and they go down and they score a touchdown with potentially Brady not getting the ball, does it seem right to you that a team can lose in overtime without their gunslinging quarterback, be it Mahomes, be it Brady, be it Breeze, be it Goff, whoever it is, potentially not getting the ball based on a coin flip?
Well, I'm totally in the minority on this, but I'm okay with it because I grew up in the era of sudden death. And sudden death, it felt like the coin flip, field goal, ball game. That's how it felt to me. When they made the adjustment that you had to, if you're going to end the game on the first series, it has to be a touchdown, that felt a whole lot better to me. You got ample opportunities on defense to make plays, to make stops, all of those things, which is football, which is what you played the initial 60 minutes to begin with. And on that last drive, and correct me if I'm wrong, there were three third and 10 or mores.
Yes.
That Kansas City did not get off the field. And Brady found a way to take it down. It's almost like the Electoral College for me, Clay. Depending on how you vote and who your candidate is, if your candidate wins the popular vote but not the Electoral College vote, you hate the system. but if your candidate wins the electoral vote and not the popular vote, you love the system. But we know what the system is going in. You know what you're dealing with going in. I'm okay with it. Now, here's the bottom line. Mahomes is so darn exciting. I think anyone who wasn't rooting New England or Kansas City would have loved for the idea for him to get one more shot because it was just so much fun to watch. But I'm not in favor of it. I like it the way it is. I'm okay with that. And the last thing I really want to see is anything close to a college overtime in the NFL. because I still have LSU Texas A&M reverberating through my head. And that was 24-24 regulation, and would they end up in the 70s?
Yes.
They ended up playing a whole other game, I believe. You know, it felt like it anyway. And everyone keeps talking about safety and taking care of kids and this and that. That overtime is not taking care of anyone. So I'm not in favor of that part of it. But I know I'm in the minority. I actually had my wife call me and yell at me because Mahomes didn't get the ball. So I know that I am definitely in a minority on this one.
Last question for you. Tennessee, you went to the University of Tennessee. Now the
number one in the country.
Number one in the country in basketball. Yeah. Wednesday I'm going to go. Tennessee goes on the road against Vanderbilt. I know you're an NFL guy, and obviously you call big-time games in the NFL playoffs. But now that we got a couple of weeks till the Super Bowl, will you pivot and be all in on the Vols?
I've been all in on the Vols anyway. I've actually been fortunate enough to have a good relationship with two of the assistant coaches. One of the assistant coaches on the staff, and when I say assistant coach, one of the administrative assistants, actually was a high school coach and coached against my kid in high school. So I've known him for a long time. I actually covered, believe it or not, Clay, as a broadcaster, I covered one or two of his state championship games as a broadcaster in Orlando. So that was a lot of fun. And another assistant coach, we forged a great relationship, the top assistant, Rob Lanier. So I've been all in on this crew for a long time and really happy because I was worried when Coach Barnes took over, frankly. I didn't know whether he was coming to be our coach or whether, hey, it was just a great opportunity and a great place after what happened in Texas. Well, he's proven conclusively he came to be the coach. So put on that orange jacket against Vanderbilt because that's what Coach Mears used to do. Remember what he said? You can wear the orange jacket against Vanderbilt and Kentucky. Those were the games. Well, guess what? Here's Vanderbilt and Kentucky. Put on that big orange blazer, Coach Barnes, and lead our number one team. I'm fired up.
Outstanding stuff. As always, go follow Charles Davis at CFD22 on Twitter. We'll probably talk to you next week as we get ready for the Super Bowl, but you've been awesome all season. I appreciate the time, my man.
Thank you, Clay. You take care of yourself, okay? Talk to you soon.
Will do. That's Charles Davis at CFD22.
Be sure to catch live editions of Outkick the Coverage with Clay Travis weekdays at 6 a.m. Eastern, 3 a.m. Pacific on Fox Sports Radio and the iHeartRadio app.
The NFL has still not issued an official response on the awful blown call at the end of the Saints-Rams game that cost the Saints a trip to the Super Bowl. And my question that is out there that I posted on Twitter is, should pass interference penalties be reviewable in NFL games? Over 6,000 of you have voted so far. It's at the top of my Twitter feed. You can go find it. 64% of you saying yes, 36% of you saying no. And so as we continue to unpack this question, I think it also ties in with the rules that should be in play in overtime. My opinion is pretty straightforward. I don't think you need to adjust the overall way that the NFL takes care of its games. I don't think it's going to add that much time. I think you just expand what is challengeable for head coaches. And in situations where there is a questionable pass interference call, that is a judgment call as well. You should be able to throw the flag. I think the NFL rule should by and large be reserved for calls that are completely blown. Like I think this situation at the end of the game against the Rams, you should be able to challenge whether or not that happened. I think you also should be able to challenge if a flag is thrown and it's clear that it shouldn't have been thrown, like we saw in the Chiefs game against the Patriots when they called a roughing the passer penalty on the Chiefs for hands to the head helmet of Tom Brady, and it didn't actually happen. I think if you can see that happen, you should be able to throw a flag and say, wait a minute, you threw a flag and said that the quarterback got hit in the head, that that was a 15-yard personal foul penalty. Actually, on replay, there was no contact there. In other words, when you have a call that is clearly missed, and look, the officials have a high difficulty of their job. They miss calls every now and then. Was or was not the knee down of the back before the ball came out? Was it a pass or a fumble by the quarterback? I don't think that's an overall indictment of the official. If he thinks that the quarterback got hit in the head and his angle was just a little bit off and he missed it, well, throw the flag there and you can get that charge, that flag, overturned if it's not right. Now, you would also be telling coaches, you only get one of these, let's say, a half. So if you get it right, you get another one like you do on replay now. But you need to think about whether or not it's worth challenging this play because the payoff may not be anywhere near what it is worth from a challenge perspective, right? So I think most coaches would hold their challenges like they do now and reserve them for either plays where it's clearly true that the official got it wrong or for plays that are monumental in the overall scope of the game. In other words, you're not going to throw a flag saying, hey, we should have gotten pass interference on that 5-yard curl route because it's not going to be worth it. But if it's fourth and four and you think your guy got interfered with on a curl route, then certainly you throw the flag if the pass is incomplete. And I also think that discretion needs to be given to the official. In other words, if it's a borderline call, the official's correct. If you can watch it and see 100%, oh, there was no hands to the helmet here, that shouldn't have been a roughing the passer penalty, or, man, my God, he got absolutely decapitated on that play, there should have been a penalty, I don't think there's any problem at all. I think it makes the game better. I don't think it extends the lengths of games at all. And by the way, if you want to shorten a game, you know what the number one way to shorten a game, and I've been on this soapbox for a long time too, charge advertisers more. This drives me crazy. Why can't you charge an advertiser twice as much and run half as many commercials? Somebody tell me this. You could cut a third of the commercials out of a game if you just charged a third more for the commercials, right? Like, go ahead, get a logo up on the screen for a longer term if you need to make up for it. But for people out there complaining about reviews and how it adds to the game, the number one cause of game length is television commercials. If you went and took out a few television commercials, you could still guarantee that this game were done in 3 hours easily, which most of the time it is. Or 2.5 hours, for that matter, right? I mean, if you are concerned with the length of a game, advertisements is what makes the game go on as long as it does. You could easily play an NFL game in 2 hours if you just streamline the advertisements. It's why I like watching soccer, honestly, because soccer doesn't have the breaks that we do in every other sport, and they figured out how to monetize soccer in a way where it makes sense. Put logos up on the screen. Have the first quarter brought to you by Snickers every single game, right? Sell off these major advertising and branding opportunities and decrease the overall amount of commercials. If you're concerned about how long the game is going on, the number one way to attack it is to attack the amount of commercials at play. Eddie Garcia, do you think that plays like this should be reviewed from a replay perspective?
Yeah, I've always heard, and I've never been an official, but I've always heard that pass interference is the most difficult call to make. And you're asking an official to make that call in real time from one angle, his angle, when we at home sitting on our couch have multiple angles at it, watching this play, and it seems like it's too tough of a call to not use the technology that we have in place. So I am definitely in favor of using instant replay for pass interference. And I also am in favor of changing the overtime rule in the playoffs to where each team gets a possession. It seems so arbitrary that we have a coin flip, give the team the ball, then the other team never even gets a chance to come back and score again to try and extend the overtime. So instant replay, yes, for pass interference, and change the overtime in the playoffs so each team gets a possession.
Yeah, I think that's a no-brainer. I think it's just in overtime that you would need to change the rule to guarantee that each team gets possession. But I felt cheated personally, because I do feel like there's a very good chance that the Chiefs would have gone down and scored if they had won the coin flip. And then I would have felt like, man, this stinks. I don't get to see Tom Brady come out and play in overtime trying to put his team into the Super Bowl. I think what allowing each team to get the ball just acknowledges is the primacy of the quarterback in the modern day NFL. And that it would feel wrong, I think, to the majority of people out there listening to us right now, if Tom Brady hadn't gotten to go on the field at all in overtime. Much like it would feel wrong to people that Patrick Mahomes didn't get to go on the field in overtime either. I want to see those two guys dueling head-to-head down the stretch. And I think, again, when you're playing to go to the Super Bowl, it's a little bit different than overtime in the regular season, where I don't think it matters as much in terms of how the rule is going to be applied. So I think that's a solution that makes a lot of sense in overtime. Allow both quarterbacks to go out on the field. Now, I understand the argument to the contrary. Well, look at what happened in the Saints game. The Rams got a turnover. They hit Breeze as he was throwing the ball. The ball fluttered. It got picked off. And they reward the Ram defense for being able to get off the field. Oh, look at what Brady did. He converted three different times on third and 10. I understand that argument. I get it. To me, it feels a little bit akin to saying in extra innings in baseball, oh, the team that gets to bat first, if they happen to score, the defense should have made a play to stop that from happening. I disagree with it. And I think the NFL can continue to adjust its rules to end up with a better resolution. Roberto, what would you do in both those situations?
I agree. They got to change that. The pass interference has got to be reviewable. And like Danny G mentioned earlier, I think it's got to be automatic. Once it's 2 minutes, automatically they have to review the overtime. I don't mind the overtime rule the way it is. I kind of like it.
I think I would add for penalties that are longer than like over 15 yards in pass interference, I would be fine with New York automatically reviewing those.
Yeah, exactly.
If it's under 15, I don't think typically the overall game changes. You could still challenge it. But in the same way that they've decided that every turnover and every scoring play is so instrumental that they need extra eyes on them, I think penalties over 15 yards in the pass interference vernacular certainly would be justified in reviewing those with more kind of eyeballs on them than usual. Dub, what would you say on both of these controversies that I think a lot of people are talking about in the wake of the way the NFC and the AFC championship games ended?
Well, our friends up north in the CFL, they've been able to challenge pass interference calls and non-calls since 2014. So if they've figured out a way to do it, certainly the NFL can figure out a way to do that as well. Because, I mean, some of those plays, like the 45-yard pass interference, I mean, those change games entirely. So I think those should obviously be challengeable. And for the overtime, I mean, they put minutes on the clock in the overtime period, 10 or 15 minutes. I can't remember what it is. Why not just play the whole quarter? That way, each team gets the ball at least once, probably more than once, and you just play an additional quarter.
Amen.
To figure
yeah,
out who
that, wins. That's an easy solution, too.
On top of that, why don't we have a real home field advantage where the home team gets the ball first in an extra period?
No, I think you flip it. I think you still go back and flip it. But the 15-minute idea and just play an extra quarter, and everybody knows that's the way the clock works. Everybody gets three timeouts and everything else. And if you score a touchdown, you get the ball back, you're trying to run the clock out. I think that actually makes a lot of sense. And I don't know why that's not the resolution, at least in overtime in the playoffs. I understand the argument during the regular season of, hey, we're trying to shorten the amount of snaps that we're putting guys under. When you're playing for a trip to the Super Bowl or you're playing to win a playoff game, I like the idea. I think that's not a bad idea at all of just having, hey, we've got 15 minutes and we're going to play an extra 15 minutes. You know, that's almost like the soccer style, right? Like, you know, in soccer that even if somebody scores, it's not a golden goal situation in the World Cup. You're going to go for whatever it is, two more 15-minute halves once you go into added time. I think that makes a lot of sense. Now, then, of course, the challenge becomes, what do you do if you're still tied at the end of 15 minutes? Do you play another whole quarter?
No. That's when you go to sudden death.
Yeah.
That would be good. Then you have the best of both worlds.
Yeah, that's not a bad solution, I don't think.
What about the PI? You like it the way it is, where it's a spot foul, or you like it like
yeah,
in college?
Yeah, we debated that last year. I think there are a couple of easy arguments here, and I don't think there's a – to me, there's not a definitive easy answer. That defensive backs are more skilled in the NFL, and so when they're beaten, if it's only 15 yards, they'll just tackle the receiver or they'll just grab him, and so it would restrict your ability – to really get very much downfield passing because every time a guy gets beat, if the ball's in the air and it's like a 50-yard pass, you just tackle the receiver and give up 15 yards. I'm not sure 100% if that's true, but I certainly understand the argument of it would take away the deep ball if the defensive back didn't have to worry about the consequences and he could just tackle a guy and give up 15 yards. The positive for why I think the college rule works is, in general, it takes the judgment call off of the official and lets everybody know. I mean, look, you may not agree with a pass interference call that's a 15-yard pass interference call, but it's nowhere near the same sort of significance and consequence of a 50-yard or 60-yard pass interference call that fundamentally flips the field and basically guarantees somebody points. So, in general, I tend to like a 15-yard flat foul, but the argument that NFL defensive backs and safeties are so much better and smarter than college defensive backs and safeties, and that therefore it would take the deep ball out of the game, I'm curious whether that would actually be true. I'd need to see it implemented, I think, for a year almost before we would know what the actual impact would be.
Be sure to catch live editions of Outkick the Coverage with Clay Travis weekdays at 6 a.m. Eastern, 3 a.m. Pacific.
Make sure that you download the podcast because you never know what you're going to miss. We have spent today's show trying to make the world a better place, and by the world a better place, I mean the NFL. We are focused on the AFC and the NFC controversies, unpacking what went down that led to the Rams advancing to play the New England Patriots. In particular, there are two major issues that we are discussing that we believe as a collective show and also as a collective Outkick Nation probably could be addressed to make football even better than it already is. First of all, debating the issue of should penalties be reviewable? The answer and consensus seems to be yes, particularly where it pertains directly to pass interference. The poll question that is up on Twitter right now, you can go vote in it yourself. Should pass interference penalties be reviewable in NFL games? If you want to vote, you can go track me down on Twitter at Clay Travis. It's the top result on my name. Little thing, you got a yes, you got a no option. 14,000 of you have voted during the course of today's show. Should pass interference penalties be reviewable? 64% of you say yes. 36% of you say no. So there seems to be a pretty substantial majority of fans out there that believe pass interference penalties should be reviewable. My position on this, I don't think you'd have to overall change the way that the challenge system exists now. I think you could just expand what's reviewable. And I think roughing the passer ought to be reviewable too. Because if you watched the Chiefs game against the Patriots, Tom Brady got a 15-yard roughing the passer penalty where he wasn't hit at all with hands to the face. And if you watch that on replay, it would have taken 5 seconds. They would have come back and they would have said, sorry, no penalty there. Go back to the down and distance that it should have been if the penalty had not been called. Same thing in the Saints game. That was an egregious miss on pass interference. It was also arguably leading with the helmet. That would have been a 5-second review. They would have come back. They would have said, first and goal for the New Orleans Saints. I don't think these are very challenging calls, and I think that if they were reviewed, they would rapidly be changed. I think you give coaches the ability to challenge bad calls, and when they see a bad call, they can do it. Just like now, coaches would have to be smart in whether or not they chose to challenge because the impact could be insubstantial. In other words, if you've got a spot of the foul, 5-yard curl route on first down where pass interference gets called and you don't think it was the right call, is that really worth challenging if it only cost you 5 yards and it was a first down and now it's first and 10, 5 yards further down the field? Probably not. So I don't think it would bog down the game to a large context. The other thing we are debating is postseason overtime. I think overtime rules are fine in the regular season. I think for postseason overtime, I felt cheated that Patrick Mahomes didn't get the football. I similarly would have felt cheated if Tom Brady had not gotten the football in overtime. I think it's unfair in an overtime game in the playoffs for one team to win the toss and the other team to never get the ball. I actually like Dub's suggestion. I like the idea that you play one full quarter regardless. 15 more minutes of football once you go into overtime. If you're still tied at the end of 15 minutes, then it's sudden death. Then I think it's hard to argue, oh, you know what, we went to overtime. Neither team could win it in the first 15. You got to end a game sooner or later. You go out, you coin flip, and whoever gets the ball first gets the opportunity to win it with a field goal. I'm fine with that. What do you guys think? We've got open phone lines right now, 877-996-6369. Those are the two issues that we are debating. Going to be joined by Petros Papadakis next segment. Who should I go to first, Dub?
We got Jose in Fremont.
Jose in Fremont, what's up?
What's up, brother? Hey, real quick, yesterday I was distracted. No doubt you didn't put money on the Patriots, but the fact that you said double digits loss just killed me, and I was like, no way. But check this out. Thank you. I hit a parlay because of you guys and your show. Lock it in yesterday. I appreciate that, brother. Hey, I think they should play a full 15 minutes, you know, in overtime. And then if it doesn't work out, you know, how about try having the kickers do a kickoff kind of like soccer?
Oh, God.
And pull it, you know.
like in the end of the game. Thanks for the call. The end of the game situation in the World Cup. God forbid if you just had kickers come out and try to decide it based on bombing through field goals.
Clay, didn't you once say linebackers or I'm sorry, linemen should be the kickers?
I said that before they changed the extra point rule or early on in this show. I said that I like the idea of making linemen kick extra points.
That's right.
I think that would have been incredible, riveting, must-see television. If everybody, like, on your offensive line or your defensive line, the starters, you know, like, you have whatever it is, four defensive linemen and five offensive linemen.
Mitchell Schwartz would be lining up for a kick.
Yeah, and every one of them gets assigned to have to attempt an extra point. That was before they moved back the extra points. I love the idea of linemen, you know, and the big shoulder pads and everything else. And you can't rush. Can't rush at all, but only linemen. And all nine of them, in theory, would have to attempt an extra point if you scored nine touchdowns. You could slot them, so your best lineman kicker would be number one. Your second best would be number two. But by the time you got down to, like, number nine, the guys could barely, like, run up and kick it at all. I think that would be must-see television. I think that's even better than having extra points be kicked further back, which obviously has added a new wrinkle to the NFL game. I think if linemen had to kick extra points, it would be amazing television. Norfolk, what's up?
Hi, how are you?
Excellent.
So I totally agree with everybody, well, with what you were saying. I don't mind having another quarter added on. Why not? I mean, to me, the more football, the better. I always get depressed when this time of year comes around.
Amen.
And I also believe that reviews, they should definitely review pass interference and roughing the passer, because both of those were crucial calls. I mean, people make mistakes. What's the big deal of reviewing it? And even the defender in that Saints game, I mean, you know, he even mentioned that he was surprised that it wasn't called. So,
no, I mean, it's a great call, Violet. I appreciate it. I think you're right. Like, that's my big issue is for a long time people said, oh, well, you can't review judgment calls. And that's such a stupid argument because everything that's reviewed is a judgment call. Did he get 2 feet in or not for the catch is a judgment call. Did he have his knee down before he fumbled or not is a judgment call. Everything that the officials do already is a judgment call. Expanding things to review, I think, only makes it better because it eliminates things that are clearly wrong. Now, again, I think if it's like I look at most officiating calls, like if you put them on a spectrum of 1 to 10, 10s are that absolutely positively has to be called. 1s are that should never have been called. And there's two good examples that happen in the NFC and the AFC championship game. A 1, i.e. that should never have been called, was the roughing the passer call that Tom Brady was the beneficiary of. I can see how that mistake could be made, should have never been called. Therefore, you would eliminate it, right? A 10 is something that should be called and was not, like the pass interference call that was not called against the Rams, right? Both of those should be remedied. I think as you examine calls and you're like, oh man, this is a 4 or a 5. Like this is a 50-50 call. You don't touch those. You only adjust and change calls that are clearly wrong, either of the missed variety or of the called and shouldn't have been called variety. And I don't think that adds much time to the game. I don't think that complicates the process of watching football very much at all. Mike in Cincinnati. What's up, Mike?
I think the referees are alone in this. I think their accomplices are in New York. And I think they don't want games to end on controversial penalties. And I think that's why they told them to let the boys play. The other thing would be, I'd like to see a flagrant foul on these PIs where you de-cleat someone and you know, tackle them before the ball gets there, and then a minor penalty of 15 yards for just excessive hand-grabbing. I think that would be to take away a lot of this judgment stuff.
Yeah. Look, there's another thing I would change if you told me that I had control of the NFL right now. I would eliminate five-yard penalties being automatic first downs. Because I thought what we saw way too much of in the regular season in the NFL was it's third and 12, quarterback drops back to pass, oh, we got a legal contact, we got holding in the secondary or whatever, five-yard penalty, automatic first down. I thought that was excessive. Give a five-yard penalty, but if it's third and 12, make it still third and 7. You know, much like you would treat a false start or an offsides, it's just a five-yard penalty. It doesn't fundamentally alter what is going on the play. I also wonder on some level, if you told officials, hey, you can only throw 10 flags in a game. Like, anything over 10 flags is too many. Would that make the game better? A part of me thinks yes, because the official's not going to be throwing his flag on a borderline play, right? I even think that if officiating crew had a limit of 10 flags, it might make the NFL better. Like, is that really one of the 10 worst things you're going to see on the field here? I think it would lead to officials making less calls, which I think in general is what we want to see. Who's on the VIP line, Danny G?
Dan in New Jersey.
Dan in New Jersey. What you got for me?
Hey, Clay. So I agree with you completely. There's already so much judgment in the calls that the officials are making today with replay. I don't think that's a good argument against. Like, I look at the Edelman play when they had to put together like two or three different angles to determine if it touches.
And it took forever. My thing is, if it takes 10 minutes to make a decision, it's not 100% clear what happened. You know, they had to piece all that stuff together for Edelman. I'm still not convinced 100% he didn't touch the ball. I think it's probable that he didn't, but I don't know how you can say with 100% certainty the call on the field was wrong.
If he had your thumbs, he would have touched the ball.
Yeah, if he had big thumbs like me, he'd have been done for.
I agree with you completely. And my second thought is, why don't they just invest in some technology where they have, you know, a little headpiece, you know, in the head referee's ear with an official upstairs to say, yeah, you know, you guys totally missed that call. Or, you know what, you nailed it. Keep going. Play on. Like, why does it have to be this whole big thing where they go over to the monitor and just
take
up so much time?
That's a really good question. I do wonder, why do they have to go review it at the monitor? If you have a studio in New York, which has all of the high-tech paraphernalia you could possibly need from a technological perspective to make the right call, and I just think about this from my experience. I spent a lot of time out in L.A. on the Fox Sports lot. Do you know who's there for pretty much every big game Fox Sports has? Mike Pereira. When they go to Mike Pereira in studio, he's sitting in front of a bank of monitors looking at any questionable call. And it's not just the game that you happen to be watching. It's all of the Fox games that are going on simultaneously. They go to him. They say, we have a difficult call here in one of the seven different regional games that's on right now. And Mike Pereira says what he thinks the right call should be. He almost always gets it right. Why would the NFL not pay Mike Pereira $10 million a year to sit in New York City, watch every single play, and render every single verdict, and eliminate the concept of the official on the field having to go look at the replay at all? Like, why do we need the official on the field to go there? Why can't he just put on a headset, talk to Mike Pereira? Mike Pereira says, hey, here's the right call, go announce it. It's a good question. I don't know why we need the Kabuki Theater aspect here, where you have to have an official go look at the monitor on the field to see what the ruling is. Why not just have the head official, who's the best in the world, I think Mike Pereira is the best in the world in real time at looking at a call and diagnosing and making the right call. Why not have the person who's the best in the world make every call? That seems to me to be an easy solution, which would also streamline the games. I guess the one complicating factor there would be, well, there might be times where there's two simultaneous replay reviews going on or three simultaneous replay reviews going on, and maybe that's the answer. But then why not have the two or three best people in the world reviewing those? I just think you pay the best. Like, the NFL is a multi-billion dollar franchise. Get the three best people. If it's Dean Blandino, Mike Pereira, and somebody else, pay them $10 million each and eliminate every uncertainty on calls like these. Got time for a couple more? Maybe so. Dub, what you got?
Eddie in Texas.
Eddie in Texas. What's shaking, man?
Hey, good morning. Hey, real quick, my thoughts are kind of like all of y'all together. I really think, and it sounds stupid, to have more officials. Put more officials maybe outside behind the goalpost, on the sideline somewhere, whatever, so they can get more eyes on the calls, along with more cameras. And therefore, and then I kind of like y'all's idea just then, just have somebody up there and call down and discuss it and make sure we have the right call. The bottom line on all this is have the two best teams in the Super Bowl. And right now, because of what happened, that is not true in my opinion. And then the last thing, I think you play till you win. What are the rules? You play quarters, 15-minute quarters, put it on the board and play. At the end of that quarter, I'm sorry. If it's tied, play another quarter. It has never happened and gone three quarters, I don't think, except about a long time ago, the Dolphins and somebody. But in baseball, in the World Series, they play seven games, and if they go to game seven, it lasts 29 innings. Guess what? It's going to last 29 innings. These are professional athletes. NFL rules, the football players don't even practice during the summer anymore. Yeah, so don't tell me they're tired and they can't get this. We're the people that support them, and it's the most the best game of the year, the championship and the Super Bowl. Let's make sure that we get the two best teams in there.
Yeah, look, I understand the argument of let's have them play full quarters until they're completely decided. I mean, I don't think there's any doubt that that is an argument that you could make. I think that could be difficult in the context of a guy gets hurt. You know, like, and if it's the fourth different full quarter that they're playing at the end, and then guys start dropping like flies. I do like Dub's idea of in the postseason, play a full 15-minute quarter, and then at the end of that full 15-minute quarter, go ahead and play sudden death at that point. I think if you haven't been able to win it in a full 15-minute quarter, it's hard to feel bad about somebody not getting the ball again. Right? That's just my solution. I don't like, regardless of who it is, if I've got Patrick Mahomes and Tom Brady, two luminescent stars in the NFL right now, the old school GOAT and the upstart challenger who wants to become the next Brady, I want both those guys to get the ball to get a chance to go and win the game for their team. I feel like we were cheated that Mahomes didn't get the ball in the same way I would feel if Mahomes had gotten the ball, driven down the field, and Brady had been left standing on the sideline and never gotten an opportunity to go win the game in overtime for his team. A couple more. Do we get more in here? Dub, what do you think? What's the time situation?
I think we can do a couple more. We got Tim in Colorado.
Tim in Colorado. What's up?
Hey, Clay. I just wanted to say that I definitely agree with the overtime rule, and I definitely agree with the other point you guys were making. The two points I wanted to make, though, real quick, is I feel like the NFL really appreciates the gray area that it's created during the regular season, because I think it adds to the mediocrity of the competition, only to be kind of put out there in the playoffs because of the decision making being so much more crucial. The other point I wanted to make is we talked about these guys being the referees being the best of the best of the year. But why are Mike Pereira and Dean Blandino down there, like, heading up the referee teams and crews and making sure that...
I think he started to break up a little bit there. I think, again, I mean, give Fox Sports credit, all right? I mean, I think you just got to give the hiring people at Fox Sports credit. Mike Pereira is the best at what he does. He retired from officiating, and Fox revolutionized the game, right? They said, hey, we think an official analyzing calls in our studio is going to make our product better. And then everybody else chased after Fox and tried to go get their own version of Mike Pereira. And Pereira came out and said, hey, this young guy, Dean Blandino, is also the next me, right? And so they brought him in as well. And I think Fox has got the two best officials analyzing games. What I'm saying is, as much as I love those guys being on television with Fox, if I were Roger Goodell, I'd be like, screw this. I'm hiring Pereira and I'm hiring Blandino, and we're putting them in New York, and we're getting whoever the third best guy is. And those three guys are watching every single game, and they're making every single replay decision. And by the way, credit to the Southeastern Conference, which plays pretty high-level football, right, with high-level pressure in this situation. That's exactly what they do. They have a studio in Birmingham with the best people who make calls all game long, right? They go straight to Birmingham, say, is the call right, is the call wrong, come right back to them. I don't think we need the sideline antics of having an official look at a monitor on the sideline. He's got an earpiece. Go to New York, where the NFL offices are, and have the best people in the entire world of officiating at the NFL all reviewing every play and make sure that you get the right call. I don't think this is that difficult. I mean, that's the solution that I would have. And I love Pereira being at Fox, and I love Dean Blandino being there. But if I were Roger Goodell, I'd be like, screw it. If we have to pay these guys $15 million a year to be basically the Supreme Court justices of NFL football, go get them and make sure we don't have these errors ever again. I mean, that seems like an easy solution to me for Roger Goodell when you consider, and they wouldn't have to pay $15 million, by the way. You'd probably get them for $6 or $7 million each. And when you look at the way that the NFL product is being devalued by these errors, it's a multi-billion dollar enterprise. Eliminating this as a concern for $10 or $12 million, that's why your CEO, again, I think it's Roger Goodell not being proactive. I think he tries to solve problems once they arise. If I'm paying a guy $45 million a year, like Roger Goodell's salary is from the NFL, I want a guy who sees problems before they arise and eliminates them. That's what a great CEO does. That's what a guy, to me, who's making $45 million a year should be doing.
Be sure to catch live editions of Outkick the Coverage with Clay Travis weekdays at 6 a.m. Eastern, 3 a.m. Pacific on Fox Sports Radio and the iHeartRadio app.
Appreciate you spending your Tuesdays with us. I would encourage you to go download the podcast. We've had a really good discussion about whether NFL instant replay review should expand to include penalties, including pass interference and potentially roughing the passer, using two different examples from the NFC and the AFC championship game. Tom Brady, beneficiary of a 15-yard roughing the passer penalty when he was not actually touched to the helmet. That would be an example of a play that would be tossed. If you were reviewing, I think it could be done rapidly using New York as the locus to actually take that review into account. And then obviously we're talking about the non-pass interference call that should have been made in the game between the Saints and the Rams that probably changed the outcome of that game and put the Rams into the Super Bowl instead of the Saints. And as part of that discussion, we've also expanded and said, do you like the way the NFL does overtime, or should the NFL adjust overtime? I like Dub's suggestion on the show, 15-minute flat overtime period. Play it just like an extra quarter, only in the postseason. Given a guaranteed opportunity for a guy like Patrick Mahomes or Tom Brady to get the ball, I think it's unfortunate when you consider the cult of the quarterback that exists in the NFL for us not to get the top quarterbacks back out on the field in overtime. Tom Brady has won three coin tosses, and as a result, he's won all three of his overtime games with the opposing quarterback never having taken the field. That doesn't seem right to me. I mean, to be honest, it just doesn't seem right that Tom Brady has won three coin tosses and he's won three playoff or Super Bowl games without the opposing quarterback ever getting the opportunity to take the field. Now, to Tom Brady's credit, the reason why that's happened is because he's taken his team down the field and scored a touchdown. And certainly in that game against the Chiefs, if you're sitting back and you're a Kansas City fan, you're saying, my God, how did we allow him to convert three third and longs, really four kind of third and longs down the stretch there, including in overtime, that's on us. I certainly understand that argument. I just think that Patrick Mahomes, regardless of what Tom Brady did the first time his team got the ball, I think that Patrick Mahomes deserves the opportunity to get the ball and come back down the field on his own and see whether or not he can match Tom Brady with his own touchdown. I tend to think he probably would have. I think if you look at the way that that Chiefs offense was operating, if the Chiefs had won the coin toss, I think it's likely they would have gone down the field, scored a touchdown into the game. I think whoever won that coin toss and got the ball first, given the way the defenses were playing in the fourth quarter, was likely to be able to go down the field, score, and in that game. Just so happened that the Patriots managed to do it instead of the Chiefs. I'd like for both teams to get that opportunity. I think that would make the NFL product better than it already is. A lot of people out there saying, well, you'll add to the length of time of games. I disagree with that. Before instant replay review, NFL games lasted about 3 hours. Now we have instant replay review and NFL games last about 3 hours. I think they're pretty smart about the way that they adjust NFL times so that NFL games are going to, by and large, last about 3 hours. All right, give me an L.A. Bron update. What we got for me? Hit the music.
L.A. Bron.
I got.
From the first show in the country to predict hashtag future Laker. Instead of 3 hours of it, Clay Travis captures all the mania in 3 minutes.
Well, Bron has picked up the circus tent and it has followed him wherever he has gone. Lakers are out of the playoffs right now. When is LeBron actually going to be back?
Still no definite word on his return date. He is still listed as day-to-day. He and Rondo, though, have been having light practices. They have missed a combined 44 games together, the duo of James and Rondo, since both going down on Christmas Day against the Warriors, who blew them out last night. But the Lakers had somewhat of a laugh as Steph Curry had a low light, slipping and missing a wide-open dunk. You know he doesn't dunk often. He was gearing up to go up strong to the hoop. His legs came out from under him. He slipped badly on the floor. Then he recovered, got to the three-point line, ball passed to him by Cousins, and he shot up an air ball.
Here is the truth for the Warriors. Ever since James Harden drained that three on them on January 3rd, the Warriors have won 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7, 8 games in a row. And by the way, we're going to talk about this a little bit maybe tomorrow. NBA ratings have collapsed this year. I know we talked a lot about NFL ratings being down. LeBron moving to LA has tanked the NBA. We're going to talk about this some tomorrow, what the NBA can do to solve this problem. They were down 30% on their first Saturday showcase. Not a good look for the NBA. Why is the media protecting the NBA and not talking about their ratings collapsing? We'll discuss tomorrow on Outkick.
Fox Sports Radio has the best sports talk lineup in the nation. Catch all of our shows at foxsportsradio.com and within the iHeartRadio app.